7 o'clock in San Francisco and the West Coast, and it's time for Minds Over Matter. Dana Rodriguez and panelists will match wits with listeners on the Bay Area's favorite quiz show. Our telephone number is 415-841-4134 with your answers and questions tonight on Minds Over Matter.
Wrong, you're right. If it ain't day, it's night. If you ain't sure, you might. It's gotta be this or that.
Ladies and gentlemen, your moderator, Dana Rodriguez.
What were you gonna say?
I don't remember now. It was so long ago, I don't remember.
Okay. Anyway, welcome to Minds Over Matter. We hope you had a very pleasant weekend and a great week on top of that. So please, if you have an hour tonight you can spare, give it to us, because Minds Over Matter is an audience participation quiz program. So, of course, we are welcoming your participation. That's very, very important. We'll be giving you questions on current events, movies, history, literature, geography, television, radio, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all we ask is that you'll give us a call if you have an answer or if you have a question you'd like to have on the air. So the number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. I do want to remind you of our email address, and it's always great to hear from our listeners out there, and that is mindsovermatter, one word, mindsovermatter@yahoo.com. If you'd like to hear our show online, you can certainly do that anywhere in the existing world or this world or any other, just by going to kalw.org. That's kalw.org. If you'd like a podcast of this show, theoretically, it will be available afterwards. So you can also go to kalw.org, and they can help you with that. So we're going to start with a round of introductions and then a round of questions. And here's the first. Jerry Nachman looks forward to reading 50 Shades of Grey, the racy account of Grecian formula number 9. I hope to, I'm sorry to disabuse you of that. But it's,
oh, but it's not. I was looking forward to that. Well, Laurie Fisher is willing to give up on the Tonys this year, but promises to remember his favorite Tonys, Perkins, Bennett, Curtis, Soprano, but particularly Morrison.
And our moderator, Dana Rodriguez, is slightly disheveled, somewhat disoriented, sort of distracted, and semi-breathless. But most of all, he's present.
Nice. But that's the way I am every week.
So. Yeah, no different. You can always use that.
I understand the Green Lantern is going to be the host for the Tony Awards this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that true?
No.
Oh, no. Seth Rogen?
No, the Green Lantern's gay, so came out as...
That's coming.
Made sense.
I didn't know that.
That was the big thing, and I don't know anything about comic books, but I've heard that that was the big thing, that they're making the Green Lantern into a gay character.
Wow. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, we have that to look forward to.
So... I always thought it was Robin, but okay.
Well, Robin's not eliminated, is he? Just
no,
because of
not.
The Green Lantern, yeah.
No. And we'll begin the questioning with the shocked Jerry Nachman.
Okay. A show that recently closed on Broadway set the record for the highest ticket price ever charged for a play or musical, $499 for a premium seat, breaking the previous gouging records, $480 for the producers. What is that show?
It was Death of a Salesman, I read this week.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it was for the maybe closing night.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was going to close. So
it closed on June
2nd. I was surprised, too. I guess
I think Philip Seymour
Hoffman. Limited run. But
well, Philip Seymour Hoffman had another gig.
It was
up.
Selling out. And so they could, okay.
Yeah, $490, was that the price?
$499. Yeah.
Couldn't they have replaced him with somebody? Jackie Mason or something?
You think so. I don't know. They do it all the time.
All right. And, okay, well, you better give us another question.
Well, thank you. Rank the most popular categories of commencement speakers, most popular to least, in these six areas. Government officials, founders of education nonprofits, politicians.
Is that different than government officials?
Well, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I guess so, yeah. Judges, TV journalists, CEOs, and this is all one category, diplomats, high-tech leaders, and actors.
All right, diplomats are lumped with actors.
Give me what you want here, actually. Again.
The most popular categories of speakers, and who What category have is asked to give the most commencement speakers speeches?
Yeah. Oh, not the most popular. They're asked. This group is asked.
Well, not
the
asked.
Most.
No, who actually does deliver the most commencement speakers?
Okay. So this is like a numerical count.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was the last category again?
Okay.
Diplomats, actors, and
let me go over them all
clowns.
Again. Let me go over them all again. Six. I think there's six. Maybe there's more. Government officials, founders of education nonprofits, politicians, judges, and this is one category: diplomats, tech leaders, actors, also TV journalists and CEOs.
And so, who's asked the most to the least?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. It's weird to lump actors with diplomats because
I don't understand.
I would think actors would be the most popular.
I don't understand that either.
Well, I would think the least asked would be judges.
Yeah.
Or close.
Well, I made a mistake. Judges, diplomats, tech leaders, actors. That is the least, yeah.
Okay.
I would have thought that was the most, but that's the least.
Right.
Okay.
All right. And then I would guess for the most in that group, CEOs. Are they a separate category? I got confused.
Chairman and CEO, that's a separate category.
Yeah, and I'd pick them at the most of
no.
the group.
No. Okay. No.
I have to mull this over. I'm remembering Pinky Lee's speech at my graduation.
No.
He's good.
Get out of
here. He rocked.
let me go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is David Price Welding in San Francisco.
Hi, Dave.
One thing I wanted to mention, since you led off, Dana, with a comment about Green Lantern. believe it or not, Archie Comics came out in 2010 with Riverdale's first gay character.
I do.
I remember that.
I do remember that, yes.
Kevin Keller is his name.
What was his name?
Kevin Keller.
Wow. Keller. I thought it was Moose.
And he's actually, from what I understand, he's actually quite popular, too.
A friend of mine that was visiting from Mexico requested that copies be sent, and so apparently it's international. So
that's good.
I had a question tonight. There were a series of wars that were fought between 1833 and 1876. Do you know the country or the name of the wars?
Well, wait a minute now. So you're saying all these wars were between the same two countries, would you say?
It was actually a civil war.
Okay, then it probably would be the I want to say the Taiping Rebellion.
I'm sorry, what was your answer?
It's the Chinese Civil War, isn't it?
Not the one that I am referring to.
Okay.
1833 to 1876.
A civil war.
Yes.
43 years.
A European civil war. Oh, then it must be the wars of liberation for the. Well, of course, there's a revolution of 1848. Are you thinking of Italy by any chance?
No.
Okay. Are you thinking of the Carlists in Spain?
I am.
Okay.
Give yourself a
nice.
Bell.
All right.
They were fought against the Infante Carlos and. Versus liberalism, there were actually a series of three that were fought. So that is correct.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. Hope you're enjoying the show. We are here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Feel free to give us a call. You have some lines open right now at 415-841-4134. Again, that's area code 415-841-4134. Laurie, it's your turn.
All right. Well, tonight's the Tony Awards, and I think we're on before they are, so I have a few Tony Awards questions. Lots of plays have, and I'm only talking about plays here, not musicals, have won the Best Play and been nominated for Best Picture, but I think only two won for Best Play and became the Best Picture of the Year for the Academy Award. What are the two?
Are these straight plays, or are you counting? Okay.
Straight. I mean, yeah, musicals are not in this question.
All right.
So which two won for Best Tony for Best Play, Dramatic Play, and then won Best Oscar for Best Picture?
So it has to be something from like 1947 or so on.
Correct.
Okay.
47 is the first year of the Tonys.
All right.
Yeah.
I want to say Doubt.
Doubt?
Yeah.
But that didn't win Best Picture.
Yeah, it wasn't Best Picture. Okay. It was Best Play.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
It's a good guess. Could you give us a decade?
Not yet.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Because we've already gotten it. It's from 47 on, so that's
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
No, that wasn't the best play. And by the way, I checked, so there's a chance I'm wrong, so people are checking at home. But was that best movie?
Wasn't that Best Picture?
I don't think so.
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? 65? No, maybe it wasn't.
Yeah, I don't think
that was The Sound of Music.
Yeah.
No, wait a minute. That wasn't right. Yeah, that was Sound of Music, 65.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Or is it 67? Okay. Never mind.
And then as a bonus, there's only one play that won Best Play and the same year was nominated for Best Movie. Okay, they both came out in the same year, the movie and the play on Broadway. And it was that was within the last 15 years. So
is the first category, is it considered a classic now?
Yes.
All right. I want you to go over the whole thing.
Okay. So question one is only two plays have been won the Tony for Best Play, Dramatic Play, and then went on to win the Best Oscar, the Oscar for the Best Movie. And then there was only one play that was Best Play in the same year, and it was recent, was nominated for Best Picture of the Year.
All right.
So it didn't win.
And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
You're from San Mateo.
Hello.
I got two questions.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, who were the only father and son who appeared on The Twilight Zone in separate episodes?
Ooh.
Father and
separate
son.
Episodes. Both movie stars, ultimately, or more TV stars?
One was a character actor and one was a comedian.
Oh,
Edwin and Keenan Wynn.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
My second question.
Yes.
What Bay Area television station was first owned by Metro Media, but then it became a PBS station, but then it became an independent station again?
All right, go through that once more.
Well, what Bay Area television station was first owned by Metro Media, then it became was sold to PBS, and then it became an independent station again?
Oh, right, PBS. KCSM?
Nope.
Channel 54.
Nope.
I'm just thinking of the ones that used to be PBS. Or, Channel 32.
Yes, give yourself a bell.
All right. Wow. What were the
calls? KNEW, but then after it was on the air for only about 2 years, and then it was sold to PBS, and then it was became an independent station again.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. Hope you're enjoying the show. We do have a couple of lines open at 415-841-4134. Again, that's area code 415-841-4134 with a question or answer. Okay, let's see here. The first traffic light in the world was installed in front of what very famous building?
Well, the White House.
No.
It wasn't in Washington, D.C., was it?
I'm not saying.
Okay. Want to give us a decade?
It was in the 19th century.
In the 19th century, all right. Really?
Yes.
They had traffic lights in the 19th century.
Yeah.
That's not a decade. That's a century.
that's as good as you're going to get.
It's close enough for us. Wow.
Well, that wouldn't tell
us. And they were for automobiles?
It was just a traffic light.
How about Parliament in London?
That's correct.
Oh, there you go.
Very good. Parliament building in 1868.
Wow.
Yes.
Before there were cars.
Yes.
Right?
Before there were cars.
There's trap for the horses.
Okay. What Nobel Prize winner opened the first movie theater in his native country?
Oh, there were so many.
Yes, there were.
Opened a theater in his native country?
Yes. What was the only Nobel Prize winner to open the first movie theater in their native country?
Is this within our lifetime?
Not mine.
Okay.
And how about telling us what this
and
person...
And to add a deference to you, I won't speculate any further.
What was the Nobel Prize winner in what category?
Yeah, what subject?
I don't think I'm going to tell you right now. A very famous Nobel Prize winner, though. Not one of the lesser known ones.
Open a movie theater. That's fascinating.
Will him or her opening a movie theater make sense given, you know, what they won the Nobel Prize for, the library
of
literature?
Oh, maybe a little bit. I don't know. Sort of. I mean, don't put too much into that.
All right. So it's not American.
What very famous Nobel Prize winner was the first person to open up a, or the only Nobel Prize winner to open up the first movie theater in their country?
Marie Curie. Her husband, Pierre.
No.
I'm thinking the very famous.
The first Curieplex.
Later on, I will give you the name of the theater in a little while.
All right. Nobody but, gets not, it. But not what they won the Nobel Prize in.
No.
Not that
one country. What country? You won't even give us that?
The name of the theater may give you a slight hint.
How about the country?
But I'm not going to say the country. Because there are only certain, there are certain countries that didn't have that many Nobel Prize winners, so it's going to give you a huge hint if I tell you that.
Or movie theaters, yeah.
Yeah.
When did the Nobel Prize start, 1908 or so?
1901.
Okay. All right, good question.
I don't know.
All right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Good evening. It's Sparky and Maddie. How are you all doing?
Good.
Laurie, I think one of the movies was Amadeus.
It was. Very good, Sparky. Excellent. You got the other one?
No, I don't.
Okay. It was the play in 1980 and was the best movie in 1986. And,
right.
Yeah, I'll give my hint is it came before that. The other one is before that.
Okay.
And I'm not going to imitate Tom Hulce's silly laugh.
Thank you.
I'm out. We're gone. Bye.
All right. Thank you. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Thomas in Berkeley.
Hey, Thomas.
Was Driving Miss Daisy the other movie?
No, it wasn't.
Okay. I have a question for you guys.
Yes.
Who was the first Berkeley resident to appear on the cover of Time magazine?
Whoa.
Wow, he was a resident of Berkeley, or was she?
Yeah, he.
Mario Savio?
No, good. It's earlier.
Earlier.
Edward Teller.
If you know the buildings Julia, that are prominent around here.
Julia Morgan.
No.
Oh.
Not Edward Teller.
No. Way up there on the hill.
Oh.
Lawrence.
Yes. Ernest
O. Lawrence. E. T. Lawrence. Ernest
right.
Lawrence. Yeah.
What year was that? Do you know?
No, I don't know the year, but I do know that that's a fact.
50s probably, yeah.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Very good.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Sal from Atlanta calling.
Hi.
Hi, good to talk to you guys.
Atlanta,
About a month ago, Jerry asked a question about what was the largest grocery store chain. I don't know if you remember. It was about a month ago.
Yeah, I do remember.
Kroger's.
Kroger, yeah.
But I was wondering, Jerry, I was wondering if you had known that another big chain, Stop and Shop, down here was merging with A&P.
No, I did not know that. Would that make that bigger than Kroger, probably?
Well, I'm not sure if it would. They're thinking of calling it Stop and Pee. So that.
All right.
That's a long way to walk for that.
It felt like a setup. All the way from Atlanta, by the way. Very good.
I'm glad I got a chuckle.
That's good.
Cross-continental joke. Very good.
Right.
Little Atlanta humor.
Yeah.
Well, I do have a question.
Okay.
I've been reading the Frank Sinatra biography, and they had a little interesting bit of trivia in one of the footnotes, and it has to do with the movie Ride Vaquero from 1953. There are two connections.
Wait. Ride the what?
Ride Vaquero.
It's called Ride, Vaquero.
Oh, Vaquero. Okay.
It's Robert Taylor and Ava Gardner.
And Frank.
Okay, so that's one connection.
Ava Gardner.
What's the other one?
You mean Sinatra was in this movie?
No.
No, Ava, his wife was at the time, Ava Gardner.
Oh, so what's the connection between the movie and Sinatra besides Ava Gardner?
Besides Ava Gardner.
Correct.
What year was the movie?
1953.
Did he put money in?
No, he had no money at that time. Okay. Ava was supporting him.
Oh, yeah.
According to the biography, anyway.
Right, okay.
He was just putting on Ava Gardner.
Ride Vaquero.
Okay, let me think. Can you give us some sort of hint on the other thing? Some frame it in some way?
It has to do with somebody else that's involved with the movie.
Somebody else is involved in the movie.
Well, Dana's the only one who's ever heard of this
is
movie.
It not, sure. How about Nancy Sinatra is in it as a child?
No.
No.
Is it, is Brad Dexter? He appears in every lot of
them.
Okay,
I thought that Dana would know this, but I'll give you a hint.
I've disappointed my listeners again, yet again, so yes, go ahead.
It has to do with the director of the movie.
Oh, who directed that? Right, Carol. God.
Think of a director that might have a indirect connection with Frank Sinatra.
Many.
An indirect connection.
Yes.
An indirect.
Maybe a former husband of Ava Gardner or something like that.
Richard Thorpe.
How about Mia Farrow's father?
Oh, John Farrow.
Exactly.
There you go.
Oh,
there,
good, job. Yeah, good job. Yeah. Good job. Good job.
Give us a bell, I guess. Yeah, two bells. Right. Yeah.
How did you
get that?
Well, I was just thinking it was what long shot.
Yeah, he was a good director, John Farrow.
Yeah, gee.
Yeah, according to the book, he had an affair with Ava Gardner, and he died a few years before his daughter ended up marrying Frank Sinatra.
So that was Frank's revenge. He married
exactly.
Okay.
6 degrees of John Farrow.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Thanks, guys.
Thank
great
you.
Great show. I love it.
All right. Bye bye.
Take care.
And Jerry, I think it's your turn.
Okay. Well, Dick Beals and Eugene Pauley, P-O-L-L-E-Y, recently died. Both were unknown to the public.
Excuse me.
But made significant TV contributions. What were they?
Are these separate ones?
Yeah.
Was one of them the one who did all the voices of, like, little Alka-Seltzer
Dick
guy?
Dick Beals, Speedy Alka-Seltzer, and Gumby.
Yeah, and many more, really a lot.
Oh, yeah, he was
on
a lot of, yeah.
Okay. Was the other one the one that invented the remote control?
Yeah, you got it.
All right.
You guys,
right.
The Flashmatic in 1955.
Right.
Very
right.
Good. Okay.
I still have one.
All right.
I'll give you one more. All right. Oh, gee. It's probably too easy. Now here's one. Yeah, this is probably a typical super trivia question that Dana will knock off. But what are the only two landlocked countries surrounded by countries that are also landlocked?
That's actually come up on the show.
I figured it out. Okay, so you know it. It sounded like a Dana
You'll
question.
Yeah. So they're surrounded by countries that are, so they're doubly doubly
landlocked.
Double
landlocked, yeah.
And no, it's not on that map.
All right.
We have a map of the Middle East in back of us.
It has nine countries on
yeah.
it.
One of them is Liechtenstein.
Right.
And the other one is not Liechtenstein. Let's see. The other one is one of the, I want to say Uzbekistan or something like that.
That's it.
Oh, very
not
good.
Not something like
okay,
that.
Yeah, exactly.
And can you explain what they're landlocked by?
Well, Liechtenstein is landlocked by Austria and Switzerland.
Correct. Correct, sir. You are correct, sir.
And Uzbekistan is landlocked.
Not quite.
Well, there's five countries.
Five it is. I take it back.
Yeah, five countries.
Turkmenistan, I believe,
Turkmenistan,
is one of them.
Maybe, yeah.
Turkmenistan, yes, that's one. There's four more.
And
the rest aren't on the map on our wall.
And it's not. The rest is now is not up there.
Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan. I never heard of it. KYRG.
Kyrgyzstan.
Tajikistan and Afghanistan.
All the places you'll never go.
I don't know why I asked that question. My unfavorite kind of question,
right.
But I couldn't resist.
Okay.
Okay.
I understand they're having a Rogers and Hart cabaret in review in Kazakhstan next week.
I'll be there.
All right. Let's go to a call.
Oh, boy.
Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, is that me?
It is you.
This is Linda Nocerito.
Hi, Linda.
Yeah. Probably not a very good guess, but on the Nobel Prize, it couldn't be Ingmar Bergman, could it?
No, Ingmar Bergman. Did he win the? No, he
I
didn't win the Nobel Prize.
I don't know. I said it wasn't a very. Good
it was game. Interesting. It was. It's an interesting guess, though.
Well, thank you.
If anybody had won it, he would have been him.
Okay.
And then opened a movie
well,
theater.
Well, I have a question for you.
Yes.
And since we were having such nice warm weather, which puts you in mind of swimming, or at least it does me, I have a question that combines swimming and about the president. So. I would like to ask you, according to a recent book on swimming, what president was reputedly went swimming every day at 5 a.m. on the Potomac naked?
In the nude, John Quincy Adams.
Okay, you got it. maybe you read the same thing I did.
In the nude, huh?
And supposedly somebody who wanted a woman reporter stole
right.
his clothes, so he would have to talk to her, would not give his clothes back until
really?
she got the interview.
Right. I think you read the same thing I did.
Right.
Okay. Now, what other presidents reputedly swam the Potomac every day, also in the nude?
Also in the nude?
What?
Dana knows all the nude president questions.
This sounds pretty fishy to me.
Yeah.
So how many are there?
Well, there are only two that I know of.
All of them.
It was a very dirty river for a long time. I don't know. It must have been cleaner then. But so, yeah.
I'm glad you said supposedly.
Yeah. I'll say, let's see. Oh, not Washington.
No. He was involved with the Delaware, but I don't think he was swimming.
Right. Not Adams.
And they did this while they were president, right?
Yes.
Well, John Adams?
No.
Is it that far back?
Well, it's not in this century, not in the 20th century.
No, I don't think it was Lincoln. Was it Lincoln?
No.
He wouldn't have been.
He's
nude.
A classier guy.
Yeah. Which presidents would have been
nude? I
guess
they hadn't invented men's bathing suits at this time.
Okay. Not so. Jackson or my guess. I mean Monroe.
No, it was Jackson.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
Andy
right.
Jackson.
Yes.
Randy Andy Jackson.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And then later on, of course, you know that a swimming pool was built in the White House for FDR, an indoor pool.
I think Kennedy was the one that used it the most.
Well, actually, I guess so. But they Nixon walled it in and used it for a press room instead,
right.
Although the swimming pool is still there. However, another president put in an outdoor pool. Do you know which president that was?
Is this 20th century or
19th?
Yes. Put in the outdoor pool. Theodore Roosevelt?
No.
Jimmy Carter?
No.
Getting warmer with Carter?
Mm-hmm.
Reagan?
No.
Gerald Ford?
Gerald Ford, that's right. And just one last question about this swimming pool.
Mm.
It was outdoors, and there was one first lady who particularly made use of it more than any other. Can you tell me who that was?
No, I couldn't. I'd just be guessing.
Okay.
That's what we've been doing all year.
Well, I know, but I'd really be guessing.
Okay.
Mamie Eisenhower.
Grace Coolidge.
No, it was outdoors. It was Barbara Bush.
Wow.
And she would even go swimming when it was icy outside and would come back with icicles in her hair, according to what
Woman on the Quaker Oats box.
Yeah.
That's right.
Naked or not naked on Barbara Bush?
I don't know.
All right.
Let's just keep it out there.
Thank you, Linda.
Thanks.
All right.
Bye.
And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7. Hope you're enjoying the show, and we certainly enjoy bringing it to you. If you'd like to call in, you can certainly do that at 415-841-4134 with a question or answer. 415-841-4134. Our panel tonight is author Jerry Nachman. He's written many books, the last one being right here on our stage tonight, Ed Sullivan's America. Lori Fisher teaches at Diablo Valley College, teaches English. I'm your moderator, Dana Rodriguez, and you're listening to us on 91.7 FM. That's KALW, your local public radio station. Lori, why don't you go ahead?
All right. Well, the great Ray Bradbury died this week, and I have some questions about him. Amazingly, I think a lot of people know he was sort of anti-technology, did not fly in an airplane until after he was 60.
Right. He didn't drive either.
That's right.
Yeah.
He allowed only one of his books to be authorized to be on e-books like Kindles, and he did it recently in December 2011. What was the book? He also had a condition with it. So and I checked on Amazon. It seems to be still true that only one of his books can you download onto your electronic reader. Which
Fahrenheit 451?
Correct.
Yeah.
Very good. And the condition was that if libraries bought it, they'd have to allow every patron to have it at once, which I thought was a great thing. But here's another question about Fahrenheit 451, published in 1954. After it was published, a magazine serialized it. Which magazine? It was printed over 3 months in a
Playboy?
Yeah. Very good. Mm. Very good.
Yeah. They did stuff like that.
Yeah. Then one more Bradbury question. He has a number of screen credits for stuff that he from his own material and animated films. As far as I can find, he only has one screenplay a credit for a movie that is not based on his material, based on somebody else's, a well-known adaptation.
I don't know if he was the only one working on this, but he's credited for the 1956 version of Moby Dick.
That's correct. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. All right.
Everybody worked on that, it seemed like.
Mm. And then I'll throw in one more since you got those so right. quickly. He has an uncredited narration, according to the International Movie Database, for writing the off-screen narration for a very famous movie. In other words, not the dialogue of the characters, but somebody came on and intoned magnificently. And it was a real surprise to see him write in this genre, like Moby Dick.
You mean he did the voice?
He didn't do the voice. He wrote what the voice said. And I'll give you a hint on the voice. The voice was Orson Welles. Orson Welles was the narrator of this movie. And Ray Bradbury, I saw in two different sources, is the uncredited guy who wrote what Welles intoned. That's kind of a hint, the intoning.
I was going to say Duel in the Sun, but that's too early. Because that's Orson Welles did that, the voiceover.
If the movie is told as a narrative.
Well, it's a there's a narrator who comes and gives the
It's like a wraparound or something.
Yeah, and I think I have a feeling from what I read, it was added later, like they needed to have some narrative arc to it, so they hired Welles and hired Welles to speak and Bradbury to write.
A
well-known movie. A little bit on the corny side.
Was Welles in it?
No, I don't think so.
A little on the corny side.
Wrestling Women versus the Aztec Mummy.
Well, that yes.
One of my favorite Mexican horror film titles.
Really good. No, it's more...
Hillbillies in a Haunted House.
No, I maybe gave a distracting thing. It's like a spectacle, that kind of movie.
Oh, is it biblical?
Yes.
All right. Those are always spectacles in more ways than one.
Somebody out there read it. Right. I think it was in his obituary.
And let's go to a call.
Hello.
Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Wonderful. I have a request and a question for you guys.
Yes.
First of all, sometimes in the elation of getting the right answer, the answer is swallowed up, and it would be good to repeat it.
All right.
Good idea.
Yeah. Next, it pays to advertise in the marketing world. There are two very famous soft drinks, and there have been taste tests done which show the favorite one gets less sales even though people prefer it. So that's America for you. What are the two?
What do you mean prefer?
In other words, the one that people love the taste more, according to the statistics, is not sold more. It's the one that advertises the most is the most.
Isn't it Pepsi and Coke?
You got it,
People prefer Pepsi in blind taste, but then they buy Coke much more.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's more traditional than Coke, I suppose.
We love the classic.
Yeah. And supposedly, even after people do the taste test and they go shopping that day, they still buy Coke if that's what they've always bought.
I don't like either one.
You
don't like a lot of things.
I'm on America.
That settles it.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
All right. I'm going to do two questions here. They're just single answer questions. I want to make sure I phrase this correctly. Who is the, what VP candidate, who is the earliest vice presidential candidate from a major party who didn't win the vice presidency or serve as the vice president to be still alive today?
Try that again.
All right. Who was the earliest? I'm looking for a chronological. So who was the earliest VP vice presidential candidate from a major party like a Democrat or Republican? And this person did not win the vice presidency, did not serve as vice president, and yet this person is alive today. So the earliest one, the one going furthest back.
But it's not going to be that far if they're still alive.
Well, I don't know. You can tell me.
You want to give us a
or
no?
Earliest.
Yeah.
How about?
A candidate and did not win.
Did not win and did not serve as vice president. Who was the earliest one you can think of chronologically that was a vice presidential?
How about William Miller?
That's a good guess. As a matter of fact, he used to do those commercials like, Express Card. But no, he's before him
or he's dead.
He's dead.
Yeah.
John Nance Garner's not
still alive. John Nance Garner's not still alive. No, I'm sorry, Jerry.
It's a tragic, tragic passing.
William Miller, well, that goes back to 64.
Yeah.
Goldwater. Yeah.
So it could have been before him.
It could have been before.
There, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's conceivable.
All right.
All right. So just to go through it once more.
Yeah.
Who was the earliest vice presidential candidate? So this person did not win the vice presidency or serve as vice president to be alive today.
That's a good question.
Okay. Second question.
Is he totally forgotten pretty much today?
Well,
except by you,
more forgotten than I don't know. That's hard to say.
He's older than Geraldine Ferraro.
You would know the name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
we would. Yeah. Our listeners will know.
Second question: what is the only place where the U.S. flag is flown all day long, and is never saluted?
Ooh. Is it because of where it's flown that it's never saluted?
I guess.
On the moon.
On the moon's correct.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. Very good.
All right.
Clever.
You're hot today.
Yeah.
All right, I'll give you one more question. This will be much harder for you because it's in English.
I don't want them to be harder.
Who is the English author who coined the phrase, the pen is mightier than the sword?
Ooh.
Who is the English author who coined the phrase, the pen is mightier than the sword? I will say it's 19th century. Okay? If that helps you.
It should.
All right. Okay.
Joseph Addison.
No.
I think he's not 19th century.
And
Will it make some sense to us? Like, this is the...
Well...
Did you say American author?
I said English.
British author.
British.
Oh. Dickens.
I will say this person's name is around today for a particular reason.
Is this person... write creative literature? Are they more a political essayist, that kind of thing?
I would say both.
Oh.
Orwell.
No.
He's not 19th century.
And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, is this me?
It is you.
Yeah, David in Oakland.
Hi, David.
Hi, an answer for your Nobel Prize winner?
Yes.
James Joyce?
It is James Joyce, yes.
Yeah.
James
Ooh,
Joyce
wow.
opened the first movie theater in Ireland.
Very
yes.
good.
Well, that's
excellent.
Great.
Yes, right. yes.
Good
I
answer.
Yeah, I have a question also for you.
Uh-huh.
There are three winners of the Best Picture at the Oscars who took their names from children's nursery rhymes.
Oh, that's a very interesting way to do it. Okay.
Not children's books, nursery rhymes, right?
Nursery rhymes. Well, it could be in the context of a book also, but they're known from...
Oh, so one of them has to be the one about Huey Long, the
All the King's Men.
Exactly.
That's good.
Okay. All right. And all right. Let's see.
Wait, I don't get.
The titles of the movies that won three movies that won Best Picture are taken from nursery rhymes, children's nursery rhymes.
So All the King's Men's taken from Humpty Dumpty.
All right. Okay. Let's see now. Let's think about this. Can you give us a decade, or would that give too much away?
I'd probably, well, I'll figure this, it'd probably give too much away.
All right.
Well, if you have a little, if you struggle with it, I guess.
Not Ben-Hur, huh?
No, not Ben-Hur. All right, well, that's
a good question.
Let's think about this. Yeah. It's a very good question.
Yeah.
All right, can you give us anybody in the movie?
That would really give it away.
That would really give it away, huh? Okay.
Well, I'll tell you, one of them is from the 1950s.
Okay.
And they won Best Picture.
Actually, I'm sorry, the 1960s, my fault.
Oh, 1960s.
And they won Best Picture.
Oh, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Oh, that wasn't Best Picture.
No.
As we found out from my question earlier.
Right.
Okay.
Well, that's from a nerd.
Not Tom Jones. Lawrence of Arabia, no.
I can think of two movies, but they were...
In the Heat of the Night, though.
they didn't win.
Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, no. Mary Poppins, no. The Sound of Music, no.
Midnight Cowboy. That probably wasn't one.
Yeah, no. Well, we're not getting it. I'm awfully sorry.
Leave it up.
London Bridge is Falling Down.
Oh.
My Fair Lady.
Very good job. Good job on that.
And then one more is from the 70s.
Oh, we need a hint.
70s. 70s.
Hmm.
I wish I was doing better on this. After the 60s, I started getting a little vague.
How about a hint?
Yeah, give us some kind of hint.
Well, it's based on a novel. If I tell you who wrote the novel, I'll give it away. But
I don't know.
70s based on a novel. No, I'm sorry, we don't know.
One Flew East. And
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Yeah.
That's really an excellent question.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I didn't do better with it.
Not at all. Okay.
All right. Good job.
I remember a movie called The Pumpkin Eater.
Yeah, it wasn't Best Picture.
And Bancroft,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah,
it's
good.
Yeah. Peter Finch? Or, no.
James Mason? No.
James Caan?
It's a British film.
Yeah, very, yeah. And one of the small ones.
Yes, the lawyer reminded me we need to repeat any questions that have not been answered yet. So, Jerry, why don't you go ahead?
Well, I'm looking for the categories of commencement, the most popular categories of commencement speakers.
Yes.
Lori, I think, got judges. And the other areas are government officials, founders of educational nonprofits, politicians, TV journalists, and CEOs. A fairly boring question, I must admit.
How about, are the most popular the founders of education nonprofits?
No, you would think that, no.
All right.
Lori?
We have one play out there that won the Tony for Best Play and then went on to win the Oscar for Best Picture. Somebody got Amadeus, Sparky did, and one's out there. And then recently, the play that won Best Play was nominated for the Best Picture in the same exact year. What was it? And I'm looking for Ray Bradbury. He has an uncredited screenwriting credit for writing the narration, the off-screen narration for a biblical movie recited by Orson Welles.
Is it the greatest story ever told?
It's not. And the little anecdote said that Orson Welles insisted on pronouncing the letter T in the word apostles. So he would say it apostles. Yeah. It sounds just like what Orson Welles would do.
All right. King of Kings?
It is. Very good.
All right.
King of Kings. Very good. Okay. So I'm still looking for the two
Samuel
best
Bronston
plays.
Things. All right. And, okay. Yes. So what do I have here? All right. Who is the earliest vice presidential candidate who did not serve as vice president or win the general election to be alive today? Right? And second question is, who was the 19th century English author who coined the phrase, the pen is mightier than the sword? The pen is mightier than the sword, known for both fiction and nonfiction.
Oscar Wilde?
No. And also, this author's essay is known, comes down to the present day for another reason, the name.
Is that something in writing or something more?
Something to do with writing, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hey, it's Kevin in Los Angeles.
Hey, Kevin.
I just missed out on the King of Kings.
Oh.
Because I knew it from the other direction. I didn't know that Ray Bradbury wrote it, but Wells pronouncing apostles.
No.
I like that movie, though. It's no Ten Commandments, but it's pretty good.
It's the blue-eyed Jesus.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Hunter. Yes.
Okay, so I was looking at a list of jobs in the film industry. And
good luck with that.
No, I didn't mean it that way.
Oh, all right.
The annual mean salary from the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Mm.
Can you tell me the top three jobs in the film industry? I'll tell you that the number one average mean salary, annual mean salary, is about $180,000.
You mean not management, of course.
Like if I'd said movie, would you say movie star, for instance? If I'd said above the title star or something, would that be
actor?
Okay, so this is a behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes,
everyone in the film industry, just the film industry in general.
Okay,
this is the mean salary. So $180,000, $125,000, and $110,000. Those are the top three average mean salaries for jobs. So
in Hollywood, in big time movies, right?
In the film industry,
yeah.
Those just have to be in Hollywood. Okay. They might make a little bit more in Hollywood, actually.
How about casting director?
No.
How about the
that is close to one of them, I will say.
How about
director of photography?
No, actually, director of photography is much lower, about $50,000.
Wow.
Average.
So casting, just like the casting director.
How
about the location? The person who finds the locations? That can't
no.
be.
No.
Production designer.
That's good.
You know what? I'll give that to you. That's number two, art director.
Yeah, yeah, it's the same area.
Costume designer.
No.
All right. Let's see.
Lighting designer, whatever they're called.
Well, lighting would fall under the
art director. Okay.
And you said art director already, right? Mm-hmm. And
did we guess director? Regular.
You did not guess director.
Director.
The director and producers combined into one, and it's number three on the list.
Okay.
Three.
Number
one.
Three. Give us a bell on that one. Yes.
One. It's not number one, huh?
It's not actor.
Composer for music.
No.
No?
No.
Oh.
No.
What? Editor?
Film editor.
Film
yeah.
editor.
No, editor is about 75K.
Gee.
Salaries are lower
so
than I thought.
It's going to be the one that's like, the, he said, like the casting director. So what else is
yeah,
there?
Like
sort
a casting
of in that,
sort of in
more
that.
In that realm than it is the creative. Let's
yeah. make I assume it's not the screenwriter, unfortunately, right?
They're always a low man on the totem pole.
No, they're about 80K.
Hmm. Okay, give us the one well, we're missing here.
Talent agent.
Talent agent. Really?
Yeah.
And what do they do?
Well, they get 10%.
Yeah.
15 now.
That's why they make so much.
15%.
I didn't even know they called them that anymore.
15%, yeah.
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 Very good.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Kevin.
That's it. Bye now.
All right. Bye. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Yeah, hi. It's Chris in El Cerrito.
Hi, Chris.
I had a guest for Best Picture and Best Play.
Yeah.
Streetcar?
No.
Desire?
No, that wasn't it. It didn't win Best Picture, right? And I don't even know if it won Best Play that year. But it wasn't Best Picture, right?
Then on the vice presidential losing, Henry Cabot Lodge?
Well, I mean, you're right that he did lose, but no, he's not. He's no longer alive to tell the story.
Yeah, he's dead.
Bob Dole.
76? Good.
Yeah.
And he's old. And he's alive.
He's old and he's alive. wait a minute.
Oh,
Dana's
checking my notes.
Dana's checking the record here. That's really good.
I have to give that to you. Yes, it is Bob Dole.
Who did you have?
Who was it supposed to be?
I DeWitt Clinton. No, I actually had Joe Lieberman, believe it or not, because I forgot about
no.
Bob Dole.
Oh.
So you were right. No, I was wrong.
Is Bob Dole still alive? Maybe he's
not. Oh, yeah. He is.
No, he is still alive.
Not very alive.
Thanks to Viagra. Yes.
Yeah. Very. Alive and kicking.
Then I had a quick question that maybe Dana should recuse himself from.
Good.
Well, I mean, considering the mistake I made about the last question, and then should give me
it's a first.
Throw me a crumb here.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Just an easy one. What three Marx Brothers, what Marx Brothers movies have an animal in the title?
Well, Monkey Business, Animal Crackers.
And Horse Feathers.
And Duck Soup.
Duck Soup and Horse Feathers.
Right.
Four,
okay.
If you count Animal, yeah.
Right. That. Yeah, great.
And that was
Thanks
without Dana, by the way.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yep.
He's still hanging his head in shame.
I am. And
the old Bob Dole.
The old Bob Dole. Yeah. I forget that. Next call.
Yeah, surprised.
Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, Sid. How are you?
Good.
So, Linda mentioned... nude Barbara Bush, and beside that, other reasons not to engage in, especially in casual.
I don't think she said Barbara Bush was nude.
I asked whether she was nude.
Right. It's only nude, but I mean, the lady's not very attractive anyway.
All right.
I mean. Jennifer Herbie is so prominent now that more women are infected with it than men. So how many...
ouch. Right from Barbara Bush to genital herpes.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's be practical. The weekend, yeah, be careful before you.
All right.
Yeah, eat it. Okay, so how many out of 10 men, how many are infected with genital herpes?
How many women are infected?
How many men first?
It worldwide?
Well, no, just in the United States.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah, United States is more permissive than many parts of the world. So just in the U.S.
You mean how many men in the United States are infected
how many,
with...
You know, how many out of 10? How many men out of 10 men?
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
Yeah.
So for every 10 men, there's, I will say...
Three.
One and a half.
No. More.
No.
Two.
No, more than three.
More than three, really?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Four. I don't want to go
higher. I'm not going...
Correct.
Really? 40%?
Yeah. Four out... 4 out of 10 men are infected with herpes right now, according to the CDC.
Of course, everybody carries the virus, I think, naturally.
Yeah. But they're not infected.
What is your source, Abe?
CDC.
Wow. Okay.
You can Google it.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, and then how many, out of 10 women, how many are? It is very bad. It is very bad. There is a lot of news coming out about gonorrhea, 600,000 American habit, and it's not treatable. Many of it's not treatable. AIDS, infecting more black women than ever.
That Barbara Bush, man, women. She's a big
deal. True. That's true. I just, you know, you get it from CDC. I heard it actually on the radio last week, but I searched it.
I'll say three.
No, more.
More five.
Than men.
Five.
Out of 10. More.
Oh, no.
Six.
Nine.
Six. No, six.
Ten.
Six. So be careful, guys. You know, sex is the most, the worst deception that nature has committed in men. Look how many people destroyed by it. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Eve. Wow. Bye-bye.
Well,
that's very disturbing. Eve,
doesn't
it?
Yeah.
That's disturbing. On a crusade.
Yeah.
There's stuff about rings on Venus and stuff, things like that. I guess that's what he's talking about. Right?
4-1. I guess he's concerned about it at home, too. Yeah. 415-841-4134. We have a couple of lines open. And about 10 minutes left, or 9 minutes. 415-841-4134. Okay, since I screwed up that question, let's see. All right, what was the first pull tab soft drink? One guess each.
Tab.
No. No, it was not tab.
That was a good guess.
That's why they call it tab, I think.
Yeah, but no.
Sure.
What year are we talking?
I'm sure.
Okay.
What year?
Well,
60s.
Yeah.
Royal Crown Cola.
You're right.
Wow.
Yes, there Royal Crown go.
Cola. You are really on a roll.
And Diet Right. That's the other one. Yeah. There was both at the same time. Yeah, you remember that, don't you?
I do. I'm sorry to say.
Royal Crown, they're not still around.
Do you have a question, Louis?
I do. Where does the title Fahrenheit 451 comes from?
That's the paper burns.
Yes. All right. How about something wicked this way comes? These are all Bradbury stories.
Yeah,
that
comes.
Know.
That's
isn't that from the Bible?
It's not the Bible.
Not the Bible.
I read that. Yeah.
Really well known.
It sounds like something Time Magazine would have written.
Yeah.
Not Time
Magazine. Backwards ran the words until reeled them in.
Before Time Magazine.
Walkout Kids.
Right.
Parody, yes. Yeah.
Something by the pricking of my thumb, something wicked this way comes. That's the line, or what's its source?
Oh.
That might help you get it.
That's in
no idea.
Sleeping Beauty.
Nope.
Cinderella. I have to think about that.
Okay. And then wait a minute.
That's no, it's not Shakespeare.
It is Shakespeare.
Is it Macbeth?
It is. It's the witches scene in Macbeth.
Oh, okay.
And that leaves the last one. There Will Come Soft Rains, one of his great, great short stories, comes from what source? Those are my three Bradbury sources. There Will Come Soft Rains.
That sounds like the Bible.
It isn't.
Okay.
Yeah, it does, kind of.
All right.
It's a beautiful line.
Yeah.
And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Sue in Berkeley.
Hi, Sue.
Hi,
Sue.
Well, good timing. The There Will Come Soft Rains is Sarah Teasdale.
Very good.
Oh, very good.
Can you recite any of it?
No.
Oh, you could, too.
Also, Bulwer Lytton did Ten is Mightier Than the Sword.
Oh.
Very good. Edward Bulwer Lytton. Very good.
The worst writer.
The worst writer, yes.
Yeah.
The worst writer, the worst sentence.
It was a dark and stormy night. Yeah.
I have a Bradbury question for you all.
All right.
So, he wrote a novel about writing the screenplay for Moby Dick, and it's called Green Shadows, White Whale. And he was inspired to write it when he read someone else's memoir about making a film. So the question is, whose memoir was it that inspired Bradbury to, three decades later, write a novel about writing?
Oh, it was that long afterwards. Oh, I was going to say, Lillian Ross, but who wrote that book?
I thought of that too, about Red Badge
White
of
Hunter
Courage.
White Hunter or Blackheart or something, whatever it was.
About making Red Badge of Courage.
Yeah, no, or whatever. So
whose memoir inspired him to write his memoir 30 years later?
Right, yeah, the date was...
Now, Lillian Ross's book was what? Called
he wrote
Movie?
It in 1992, but that doesn't mean that the memoir came out that late. But he read a memoir by a very famous person about making a very famous film, and then went back to his making a Moby Dick and wrote a novel.
Hmm. Did Fitzgerald ever write about making of a movie?
Sorry?
Fitzgerald's memoir of making.
He wrote fiction about it when he used the Hello's Pat Hobby stories.
He didn't write it. It was. Bud Schulberg wrote that book about
what makes Sammy run.
No, it was a making of a movie with Fitzgerald.
That's a great guess, but this is a nonfiction memoir.
The Disenchanted, I think, is the name of the Schulberg.
Making a film that set him off. On
okay, the all right, all right. When was the first book written?
Oh, I have no idea. I would guess maybe the 70s or 80s. But I actually don't know. But the film was much earlier. The very famous person who wrote an account of filming a very famous movie.
Yeah. And do you want to give us the year the movie was made that the person wrote about?
It's not the Katharine Hepburn's
yes.
book about, the African Queen.
Yes, exactly.
But I can't remember the title of it. But yeah, that's.
So
yeah.
Who wrote that book?
Katharine Hepburn.
Oh, she did.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
And Bradbury was inspired by that.
Right.
Very nice. Very nice.
Good job.
Thank you, Sue.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, Sue. Bye-bye.
Yeah, did you ever read The Disenchanted, the name of the book that Bud Schulberg wrote about making a movie with F. Scott Fitzgerald, and he got sloshed during the trip about the Dartmouth Winter Carnival.
Oh yeah, it's called Winter Carnival. The movie's
in
called
the movie,
Winter
yeah.
Carnival,
yeah. But yeah. The book or the memoir is called
the Lillian Ross book is great. The one about the Badge of Courage. That really was good.
That's called movie, I think.
Yeah,
yeah.
Movie. Right.
Okay, sorry. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, Dana. It's Dave in SF.
Dave, good to hear from you.
You're red hot today. I'd like to know, what did you
eat? I think Lori is more red hot than I am.
Kellogg's Corn Flakes.
What? I'm sorry, say that again.
You're red hot today, answering all of these questions with the correct answers. And I wondered, what did you have for breakfast? Kellogg's Corn Flakes?
No,
Wheaties.
As weirdly enough, I have started eating cornflakes again. But
they
weren't Kellogg's cornflakes. They were just the Safeway brand cornflakes. I'm not recommending them. I'm saying I ate them.
Are they performance enhancing cornflakes?
They
corn
are.
Flakes?
Yes.
Yeah, I can tell.
And of course, the steroids help too. But yeah, thank you.
Anyway, I have a Rockefeller Center question.
Mm-hmm.
When Rockefeller Center opened in 1935, they also opened the highest nightclub in the country. Mm-hmm. It was 60 stories above the street. They called it the Rainbow Room.
The Rainbow Room, I was going to say, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was the first dance band to open?
Whoa.
That's a great question.
Rockefeller Center.
Guy Lombardo. Guy Lombardo?
No. And who was the vocalist?
Was it Ray Noble?
Yes, it was.
Oh, Dana.
He came to the United States and formed a band around that time because he couldn't bring his British band over. He
Those
formed
are
an
the cornflakes. And who was the vocalist then?
Was it Al Bowie?
Exactly.
Oh,
okay.
Man. You're well, too much for me. Give yourself belt.
Thank
All right.
You.
Okay, we got to clean up very quickly. Jerry, what do you got?
Well, the most common commencement speakers are TV journalists. Chairman and CEOs, this is in order of popularity, founders of education nonprofits, politicians and government officials, they're tied. Okay.
Mm-hmm. The best play that won last year, War Horse, was also nominated the same year for the best picture. And the other one that won best play and best Oscar, A Man for All Seasons in 62 and then in 66.
Good job. I don't have any questions left. They were all answered, so especially the wrong ones. Anyway, so if we did not get your call, we do apologize. Please remember that Minds Over Matter is here every Sunday at 7 p.m. We do hope you enjoy the show. We certainly enjoy bringing it to you. Our panel tonight was author Jerry Nachman. From Diablo Valley College, Lori Fisher. Thank you very much, Lori. I've been your moderator, Dana Rodriguez. Our thanks to Kevin for doing all the hard work out there. And have a great week, everybody. Please join us next Sunday. Bye-bye.
If it ain't dry, it's wet.